Today's show is brought to you by Five Nights in Vegas, a new romance by Elizabeth Stokes. It's about meeting, getting married, and falling in love in that order. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, broadcasting from the magical studio in the sky, the only Pokestop on the planet guaranteed to give out incubators, 10-kilometer eggs, and lure rare Pokemon with a CP rating over 800. All you nerds out there understand that. And also all your five-year-olds, all the five-year-olds that listen to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today, we've got a bunch of films to talk about. None of them for those five-year-olds who are playing Pokemon Go, but those movies are Jason Bourne, Bad Moms, Nerve, Into the Forest, and Roseanne for President. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is really not news. It's actually a correction. Somebody caught me in a lie. No, not a lie. It was just a mistake. Last week, I was talking about the whole thing with Divergent going to a TV series and how that was kind of considered a step down. And I mentioned that if Star Wars, if they just did the first three Star Wars movies and went to TV series, that would have been considered low rent. And somebody on the internet, because the internet knows everything and the internet does tell no lies, one of the people out there on Twitter, Michael C. is his name, and his Twitter handle is Fueled by Metal One. He responded, just listened. Star Wars did go to TV after Jedi with two made-for-TV movies, The Ewok Adventure and The Battle for Endor. Yes, you are absolutely right. There were TV appearances on Star Wars, not just on like little sketches and stuff, but not only that, you also had back in 1978, the infamous Star Wars Holiday Special, which of course was a variety show. This train wreck of a variety show that was put together that George Lucas actually pretended didn't exist for years, except he forgot that people had videotape players at home and had taped it, and then of course it circulated. It's on the internet, you can find it. They even did a riff tracks on it. That's true that The Ewok Adventure and The Battle of Endor were both made for TV, but the difference is, and this is where I'm sort of defending myself, you're absolutely right, it did go, and those were indeed low rent. Those were indeed considered substandard movies, which essentially proves my point. The only difference is, those weren't like part of the canon, those weren't Lucas expanding his Star Wars universe. They took place on Endor. They were these very limited movies that sort of took place in the background. They were not at all meant to interfere with anything in terms of the grander story. So, yes, they did exist, but they're disastrously bad, but not nearly as ridiculous as the Star Wars Holiday Special. But yes, Michael, you're correct. I did make a mistake. Although that mistake does prove that I'm right. That's the only kind of mistake I'm allowed to make, are mistakes that prove me correct. A couple things that have come out of Comic-Con, because that was, of course, last weekend. It was going on during the weekend, so I really couldn't comment on it in the show. So let's talk about it this week. There's a lot of stuff that happened. There's a lot of stuff on TV front, you know, with Game of Thrones and Gotham and all that stuff that I really don't cover TV as much. But a couple things in news. Brie Larson was finally officially announced to be Captain Marvel. Now, of course, this is not Captain Marvel from Captain Marvel and Mary Marvel and Captain Marvel Jr. in the Shazam comics. They've got their own Shazam movie going on at DC. Captain Marvel is a character that was created that sort of took the name Captain Marvel from Captain Marvel, which was originally published by Fawcett Comics, and Fawcett was sued by DC because he was too similar to Superman. And so Marvel Comics just took the name, since they have Marvel, and they kind of made their own, and then it went from a Captain Marvel, which was a guy, to a female. So this is going to be one of the first big female-driven superhero movie from the Marvel universe, which is interesting because DC's kind of jumped the gun on that with the Wonder Woman movie. More on that later. I mean, there's no director attached. I'm assuming the script's not done, but that's an interesting... I think Brie Larson's a good choice because she's game to do popular. She's game to do art house. She does comedy. She does drama. She's good for that. Kurt Russell has been announced to be Star-Lord's dad. I don't even read any more of that into the story for the Guardians of the Galaxy because I don't want to know what happens, which dovetails into something Joss Whedon also said at Comic-Con about trailers ruining things spoiler-wise. And he's not actually correct. I remember seeing a lot of classic trailers back in the day that they were incredibly spoilery. I mean, stuff like Planet of the Apes and Annie, these stuff gave away the ending of the movie in the trailer. It's the teasers that don't at all, and some trailers still are spoilery, but I don't even think it's the trailers and the marketing as much as it is the people reporting on it. There's this voracious crowd on the internet that just wants constant updates and know who's going to die in what movie and this. I don't want to know that. I just want to go see the movie on my own. So that's why all I know about Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is he's going to be playing Star-Lord's dad, and I stopped there. I don't even know, I don't know what character. I don't even want to know what species he is. Now, the last thing is the Wonder Woman trailer dropped at Comic-Con, and this is a great time to segue into another segment we have on the show. That's right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, and that sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. As I was talking about, the Wonder Woman trailer was the big talk of the town last weekend at Comic-Con. Let's just play it.
Have you never met a man before? I mean, what about your father?
I had no father. I was brought to life by Zeus.
Well, that's neat. I can't let you do this.
What I do is not up to you.
This opens on June 2nd, so it's almost a year from now. It's next summer's one of the big films of the summer, which will be the first summer release for a DC superhero movie like that, like full-blown tentpole summer release since Man of Steel. People went bonkers over this, and in fact, over the course of this past week, it was the most discussed Comic-Con trailer on Twitter. And I think that shows a great example of how Twitter isn't just controlled by misogynistic men children, but it's also controlled by raging feminists and guys who desperately don't want to be called misogynistic men children by those raging feminists. My message on this Wonder Woman trailer is calm down, people. It is not as good as you're saying it is. And I can tell you exactly why, because when I went to go, I watched it. Then I went to go pull a clip, and obviously I can't just have sound of them fighting and explosions and music, because that doesn't give you any sense. You want to hear a little bit of dialogue. Do you know how little dialogue is in this full trailer? Very little. And something I noticed about it is Gal Gadot in the trailer, it's very much like her appearance in Batman vs. Superman. She has like just a handful of lines in the trailer. I think that Chris Pine talks almost as much as she does in this trailer. I mean, it looks cool, but most of it's just her fighting, and that's cool. And Gal Gadot's a beautiful woman. She can do the athleticism. I would have liked a beefier, bigger woman like a Lucy Lawless, but, you know, she's fine, and she looks beautiful. She can't act, though. A great theme song and some great action scenes and a short skirt and nice legs and a caboose that flips out every now and then is not going to help you with your acting. If you saw Criminal, which comes out on Blu-ray this week, she's terrible in that movie. She's embarrassing when she tries to emote. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen here, because ultimately this trailer, it's not great, but it's not great. It makes me want to see the movie, but I'm also terrified that there's going to be some character moments with Gal Gadot that she can't carry. I mean, never forget Ghostbusters, people. It's not as bad as they said on the internet, but it's also not as mind-blowingly awesome, you're going to fall in love with Kate McKinnon, good as they said it is. That is the hyperbole of the internet. I want to play this last trailer really quick, and it's a DC day today, and that is the Justice League trailer, the teaser that came out at Comic-Con.
Barry Allen. Bruce Wayne.
You said that like it explains why there's a total stranger sitting in the dark in my second favorite chair.
I'm putting together a team. People with special abilities. You see, I believe enemies are coming.
Stop right there. I'm in.
You are? Just like that?
Yeah. I need
friends.
One of the things I think they're doing in this, at least with this trailer showing, is they're going a little more whimsical, a little more lighthearted, a little more joking, because Batman versus Superman was too dark for a lot of people. I like the idea that Bruce Wayne is sort of tongue-in-cheek. Ben Affleck's owning this trailer, but so is Ezra Miller. He's going to steal the show. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking Bad Moms and Nerd. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling in with the movie reviews. Let's start off with Bad Moms. Mila Kunis plays a mother who is fed up with having to be perfect and quits trying so hard to please other people.
The bake sale. No BPA, no MSG, no BHA, no BHT, no sesame, no soy, and of course, no nuts or eggs or milk or butter or salt or sugar or wheat.
No.
What's that now?
I'm so tired of trying to be this perfect mom. I'm done.
You said everything I've ever felt about being a mom, but couldn't say.
There's so many rules now.
Don't punish your kids.
Don't say no to your kids.
Be bad moms.
Oh, I'm in.
To bad moms.
This is the kind of movie that I'm saying is the first truly anti-Pinterest movie of the decade. And I mean that by going on the internet and looking at Pinterest and looking at mommy blogs. And how many cheesy pictures of kids' birthday parties and the things that people make for them. And just the pressure right now to be that perfect mom. It's maybe not as much now as it was like 5 or 6 years ago. But it's still there where you have to make them breakfast. You have to make them lunch. You have to make a clean house. You've got to do work as a part-time mom. You've got to go and be involved in this and be involved in that and volunteer in this and that. And it's gotten to be too much. And almost to the point that it's swinging back the other way. You're already starting to get blogs that are saying, screw you, I'm a bad mom, it's okay, I have a glass of wine when I watch my kids. This is a movie that is meant to bust that whole, you can be everything to everyone and you're perfect. In film, they say you can have it cheap, fast, or good. You can pick two of those, but you can't have all three. And I knew this, I discovered this a long time ago, because I took care of my kids from infancy. As a parent, you can have a clean house, you can be a good parent at home to your kids, and you can be a dedicated person at your job. You can't have all three of those. One of those is going to have to give. And at some point, you're going to have to choose one. And generally, I choose to lose the clean house. Our place is a mess. It's a wreck. But that's okay. Most people are. I grew up in the 70s where no one was expected to always have the perfect house. But now you see, and even in Bad Moms, violates its own premise because she still has this gorgeous house that's immaculately kept, always clean, everything's put away, all the dishes are done. They have a big rager of a party, and the next day, there's maybe a bottle of wine and some glasses on the counter. That's not what happens. So it doesn't exist in reality. But, you know, ultimately, this is for people who want to vent on that. And this is for the girls' night out crowd, the women who want to, you know, like say, hey, you know, I may not feed my kid organic food and gluten-free, but, you know, they're going to turn out okay. And this is a little bit of a smack in the face to all the people that are overly scheduled and don't let their kids just be kids and don't teach their kids how to actually take care of themselves. I mean, my kids have been able to feed themselves for years. And in this movie, she's got like teenagers who she still has to make breakfast for, which is stupid. If you're a teenager, you're going to make yourself breakfast. My God, it's a bowl of cereal. But this is very funny. Katherine Hahn steals the show as sort of this train wreck mom who's, you probably wouldn't want to have babysit your kids, but she'd be a lot of fun to go out drinking with. And Kristen Bell also is really funny in this as sort of the mousy mom who's got really terribly behaved kids and kind of an overbearing husband. And there's actually a greater story of hers to be told that really needs to come out because, you know, their kids are like punching her in the stomach, which that would never happen in a sane person's household. But of course, there's that whole thing, you can't yell at your kid. Look, I not to get on a parent diatribe, but I have no problem disciplining my kids. I have no problem telling them when they've done something wrong and getting them to look you in the eye and take responsibility for that. That's what we need in this world today. These people who sort of like pussyfoot around their kids and handle them with, no pun intended, handle them with kid gloves and then be a helicopter parent and don't let them skin their knee and brush it off when they're playing in the backyard or at the park. Those are the people that are the problem. That's why you get these kids that then they grow up and they don't know how to take care of themselves from minute, not just day to day, but hour to hour and minute to minute. Bad Moms will make you laugh. It has a lot of good jokes in it. If you're a parent or any sort of caregiver, you're going to enjoy some of the stuff that happens in there because it's completely ridiculous, but also sadly very true. The only big problem is, of course, they're going after the PTA, kind of like Harper Valley PTA, if you remember that movie back in, like 1980 or something. But she's trying to overthrow the PTA member, but played by Christina Applegate. But honestly, this PTA in the movie has an alarming amount of power at the school, which is completely unrealistic, which would like rub my wife the wrong way because she's a teacher and she'd be like, this is ridiculous. No one has hiring and firing decisions on the PTA, but you got to just accept it to make the movie work. So ultimately, Bad Moms is a lot of fun and it's a lot of laughs. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Nerve. An underground online game dares its players to do increasingly dangerous stunts until one emerges totally victorious.
Welcome to Nerve, a game like Truth or Dare, minus the truth. Watchers pay to watch, players play to win, cash and glory. Are you a watcher or a player?
This looks very sketchy. Is this legal?
V, life is passing you by. You need to take a few risks every once in a while.
I do take risks.
Okay, you're playing Nerve.
What happens if I bail?
You lose everything.
All of our money is missing.
Watchers, they stole our identities. We became prisoners of the game. The only way out is to win.
This is done by the guys who did the Catfish movie, a documentary about how they were catfished by a woman on the internet. They did one of the Paranormal Activity movies. So they have this new media type of handle on things. And that's good because it grounds the movie a little bit. You can tell the studio, I think, wanted this movie to be bigger and more fabulous than it was. And it threatens at times to become like Hackers. If you've ever seen Hackers, which was 20 years old, and their conception of hacking and computers and the underground geek culture is bonkers. And it looks like a cheesy music video from the 90s, which is essentially what Hackers was. It was just a 2-hour version of it. So you have that in this where there's an unbelievable amount of connectivity in this movie. I mean, we live in a world where Pokemon Go, you can barely connect on a regular basis. You're constantly getting kicked off. You're constantly having to wait for it to cycle through. The app constantly crashes. Yet somehow in this movie, this underground set of servers, everyone's streaming all the time. How are they connected and how are they staying connected and how do they deal with the rising and falling back? There's so much stuff that's so ludicrous in this film. But the general idea is, you know, one-upsmanship. There's a movie called 13 Sins. I reviewed it a couple years ago. It's by Daniel Stram. He's the guy who did the Last Exorcism. And it's actually a really good movie that kind of follows the same principle where it's this series of challenges you have to keep and each time you win more and more money. This one just ties it to a social media and a youth angle. And the reality is, even though it's completely ludicrous and silly at times, if you can suspend your disbelief and just enjoy it, it's actually a completely passable thriller. It works. It's short. It kind of breezes through. It never bogs down or lags. And as silly as it gets in the end, it still is an enjoyable film. I enjoyed watching it. I didn't feel like I wasted my time, which is a lot more than I can say for some of the movies I've seen this summer. But ultimately, I mean, it's still ludicrous. I mean, it's the kind of movie my parents would watch and freak out and say, oh no, isn't this terrible what they're doing? Can't they do this? Can they do this? And then my 15-year-old kid would watch it and say, yeah, it doesn't work that way. That would never happen. Nerve kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Jason Bourne and Into the Forest.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam
Gangnam Style. Whoop, whoop,
whoop. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing with the movie reviews. Let's talk about the big one this weekend, and that is Jason Bourne.
Matt Damon.
Returns as Jason Bourne, infiltrating the government information network to learn the secret behind his original identity.
I remember everything.
Remembering everything doesn't mean you know everything.
We've just been hacked. Could be worse than Snowden.
Facial recognition got a hit.
Jesus Christ, that's Jason Bourne.
Why would he come back now?
He's seen things. He knows things. What if he's not coming for us? What if it's something else?
The whole story behind the Bourne movies is kind of amazing. It started out with The Bourne Identity, which was directed by Doug Liman back at like 2000, I think. And that was a good movie. That was a fun action thriller. And then they did The Bourne Supremacy and The Bourne Ultimatum, which were the two that were directed by Paul Greengrass. And those were great movies. Those really took it somewhere different. And Paul Greengrass cut his teeth making these action films. And they were a lot of fun and very... expertly done and very classy, but also very brutal at times. Then I think what happened was like Matt Damon didn't want to work with the new director, Tony Gilroy, and they had a little bit of a falling out. And so he wasn't going to be in it. So they said, well, let's bring in and tell this story about Jeremy Renner's character. And I think the whole purpose of that was to branch out the series and do something kind of like the James Bond film, even though they weren't recasting Jason Bourne, but doing it where they can have different actors and still tell similar stories. And actually, I kind of liked The Bourne Legacy. I thought it was fine. It ran a little bit long, but I would have liked to have seen him pass the torch over to Jeremy Renner. I think he had a good handle on this movie. It didn't do so well. So, of course, Universal wanted to get Paul Greengrass back, and they wanted to get Matt Damon back, so they brought them back. You know, Matt Damon's in his mid-40s, but he made himself look really strong and cut, and he worked out. He looks almost as good as I do without my shirt on. And because it's got Greengrass and because it's got Matt Damon, it feels like an authentic Bourne movie. And it's one of these films that has all those elements that make a Jason Bourne movie exciting and fun to watch. You've got international locations. You've got chases, you've got fights, you've got this big epic car chase, you've got hand-to-hand battles where Jason Bourne is using found items to kill people like chair legs and rubber hoses and that sort of thing. You've got Tommy Lee Jones and Alicia Vikander as the people working for the CIA in the dark room barking orders at people with monitors in front of them. It works. It has all the stuff you'd expect for a Bourne movie, except the stuff that actually makes the Bourne movies great. And that is a plot, characters, and good development of those characters. None of that's there. Honestly, I can't tell you what the plot is. He's trying to find out more information about himself. And there's a bit that he finds out. But, you know, it reminds me of when I was reviewing Independence Day. And I remember saying one of my problems with Independence Day is when the original one came out, you'd never seen this before ever. And that's what made it such an event movie. Whereas when Independence Day came out this summer, not only had you seen this before, you'd seen it a couple times this summer already. And that's the way I felt with this plot detail. It's a tired cliche plot point, but we've actually literally seen it in another big movie this summer. So there's nothing unique about it. And there's that section of, I think it's The Bourne Supremacy. I think it's the second movie. And he's there trying to track them down and he's, you know, stalking them and it's them sort of trying to track him. And it is a really great scene. And it's like 20 or 30 minutes in the movie. It's like that scene just stretched out to an entire movie. They kind of mined all they can with Jason Bourne. There's not much more you can do with him. The whole Treadstone, Black Ops, there's literally a scene where they're going into files and it's the files are named Black Ops, which I'm like, really? The CIA names their files Black Ops. It's okay to have it named Treadstone, but secret files no one should read. That kind of it becomes almost a parody of itself if it weren't taken so seriously. And there's a whole angle of the movie that deals with privacy and invasion of privacy and mining information from a technology source. And again, we've seen that before in movies like Ex Machina, which came out last year, but not even last year. We've seen it this summer with Now You See Me Too. There's almost scenes of identical approach that's in other movies. And that's one of the problems when you're sort of trying to deal with a current issue. So this movie's okay. It's one of those that you can watch and you'll be entertained and it looks cool, but it does nothing for the series. It reminds me of what it's like if you've ever watched a series, a TV show, all the way to the end. You get to that last season and they know they're canceling it. They do the courtesy of saying, you're not going to have another season. Wrap it up. You've got 14 episodes to do so. And they really only have story for about 8. And you have those 6 episodes out there that do nothing. They don't further anybody's character. They don't introduce anything. There's no change. It's just treading water. And that's what this movie feels like. So I'm going to have to say that Jason Bourne kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie, which is Into the Forest. After a mysterious power outage occurs, 2 sisters try to survive on their own in their secluded home.
What is it?
Why don't I have a signal?
Okay, there's no water either.
There's nothing.
This is all we have. We have each other.
Anybody there?
We need to stick together. What else are sisters for?
This is not the first movie that we've seen about some mysterious power outage or event that takes people back to before electricity and running water and how people respond. And there's a movie that came out 20, 25 years ago called The Trigger Effect, which it starred, I think, Elizabeth Shue. There was a mysterious power outage. Power just ended, but it took place in a city. And in that city, it descended into chaos within hours. Now, I've actually literally been in that situation before. I remember, well, it's not mystery, but a couple years ago, about 5-6 years ago, there was a huge storm, a windstorm that came across the Midwest, and it hit Ohio and Kentucky and West Virginia and Pennsylvania and all the way down south. It was this massive storm that came out of nowhere. No one expected it. It was part of a hurricane, and it just toppled trees, and we're talking millions of people without power. And I'm fortunate enough to live on the same circuit grid as an old folks home and a major traffic light. So they got our power up and running pretty quickly. But like my parents, they live in a relatively affluent area of the city. They're not super wealthy, but it's like it's known for being the place where a lot of rich people live. Even though they're not rich, they're in the slums of the wealthy suburb. Their power is out for, like 2 weeks. And the reason they let that happen is because that wasn't going to make a news story. You know, if the old folks home didn't have power for 2 weeks, that would make a news story because people would die. But if just my parents who live in the rich area of town didn't have power, people are like, good for you. Learn to live like the rest of us sometime. But the whole point is I've been in a city without power for a couple days, and you don't descend into chaos by lunchtime. It would take a while. The problem with this movie is, unlike The Trigger Effect, which took place in a city and it happened very quickly, nothing happens. And not that I'm looking for horrible things to descend upon people, but seriously, in the movie, it is 6 months of no power before anything happens that's really dangerous. And that's just boring. It became this sort of frustrating film saying, look at these poor white girls out here. One's a dancer and one's wants to be a college student, but they live in a house and they've got plenty of food and plenty of wood so they can keep warm. And it's just like, this isn't showing society collapsing. This is just showing two people. Now, I get it. the movie is a microcosm. There's a symbolism of this for greater society, and them trying to live in the house is trying to be on their own. And there's a symbolism of growing up and, you know, how technology extends youth, and not just youth, but adolescence. But ultimately, this, I was just bored with this movie. So I'm going to have to say Into the Forest sucked.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Roseanne for President, the movie, not a political view, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Finishing up the movie reviews, let's talk about Roseanne for President. This grassroots documentary chronicles the 2002 presidential run by lightning rod superstar Roseanne Barr.
Here I go, running for president.
I was like, what is she doing now?
She approaches socially relevant causes in a manner that most politicians would run away from.
She had a vision of what she was trying to say to America, about America, and she was willing to fight the fight.
You know, everybody knows Roseanne Barr.
I wasn't shut out by networks or nothing else. I won't be shut up here either. But you're right, I don't want to just attack. I really just want to attack.
This election is such a train wreck in terms of unpredictability of things that were going to go on between candidates and independent candidates and people coming in from outside into parties and then parties revolting against them. You would have never expected this to be so chaotic. And that's kind of what makes this movie interesting to watch right now. The 2012 presidential race was a lot less unpredictable. You had Obama, obviously, was going to be Obama in 2012 as the Democratic choice. And then you had Romney on the Republican side. And Romney was a very safe Republican bet. I mean, this was a guy who'd run several times in the past. So it wasn't Donald Trump. Donald Trump comes out of nowhere and, you know, wow. And at the same time, you had Obama just, of course, clinching it because he was the incumbent. But so you didn't have Bernie Sanders on the other side, just kicking up a dust storm in both the Republican and Democratic camp. Who knows? Maybe Roseanne Barr would have had a better shot going this year for president. But she sort of made her big run in 2012. This is an interesting film because Roseanne Barr is not at all a mainstream candidate. She does not have mainstream views. She is very far left liberal. I mean, her corridor to politics was through Michael Moore and in his rallies. So already that tells you what side of the fence and how far she is leaning on. And she is and has never been somebody to play things safely with what she says. I mean, she was out there saying she'd bring back the guillotine for bankers, and she was swearing at her rallies and being obnoxious. And you all remember the fiasco with the national anthem at the San Diego Padres game. She is kind of crazy. And that's kind of been her thing ever since she did stand-up back in the 80s. And then, of course, did her show Roseanne, which was a huge show. I never watched it. It wasn't my thing, but I recognized that she went as far as she could possibly go as a superstar. And then you lose that. At some point you peak and you come back down, and she's not getting the Emmys that she was. And she let her political views sort of dictate how she did things and what she did, which is fine. You know, that is fine. And there's no rule that says that we need to listen to celebrities when they talk about politics. And if a celebrity wants to move into politics, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I mean, we've had that happen. Heck, we have a president that did that. Ronald Reagan was a celebrity. He was an actor who moved into politics. So this is nothing unheard of. It just is you're going to ruin your acting career. I mean, Fred Thompson sort of did, went back and forth, but he was never a lightning rod or controversial. So as a celebrity, it's interesting to watch her because she is not the Roseanne that we all remember from the TV show. She is a little bit, but she's very brazen in this, and she's very raw. She's at home smoking dope, and she's drinking wine, and she's trying to woo the Green Party, and it's fly-on-the-wall kind of documentary style. For as much as she knows Michael Moore, she certainly doesn't use his style. And it's her spouting her political views, which is kind of insane. It's sort of like sitting there at Thanksgiving dinner and listening to your drunk sister-in-law just rant about politics. That is kind of what it's like listening to Roseanne rant about politics in this movie. And this also is a back-end look at how third-party candidates run. I'm not talking about libertarian parties, which is far more organized. If there's ever a third party in America, it's the libertarians. They're just very, very small. And it isn't even, you know, she wanted to be in the Green Party. And the caucuses in this were, I mean, they're meeting in like community centers. This is hardly the high level politics that you get in the Democrats or the Republicans, or even the libertarians. And that's what's kind of fascinating about this, just because it does chronicle these teeny tiny little third parties that she goes through. It's an interesting look at our political system, and it makes you wonder about the two-party system and if any of these third parties or multiple parties could actually have a fighting chance in the giant scheme of things. You know, and I'll leave that up to the viewer to decide. I'm not going to, like I said, I don't really do politics on the show. But this is kind of a fascinating movie because it is a bit of a train wreck. And it is an absolute chaotic mess that her campaign was in, especially when she was running for the Green Party and she didn't want to fly places because the Green Party kind of frowned on that, but that also caused her to not show up at some events and just kind of get voted out because Jill Stein was at all the events and she ended up getting the nomination. It's an absolute mess. It's kind of a train wreck. And like I said, it's like listening to your drunk sister-in-law talk about politics. But what's interesting is I was watching this on one of the nights of the Democratic convention, and everybody on Twitter is talking about, you know, Hillary this and that, and this person gave a speech, and Bernie this, and people are mad, and people are happy, and people are enlightened, and people are ecstatic, and people are grumpy, all different types on my Twitter feed. And I'm here watching Roseanne Barr in a time capsule from 4 years ago run for president. And it really kind of put things in perspective, the chaos that the two big parties are in kind of right now. And that's the chaos that was being experienced by Roseanne Barr back in 2012. And you sort of spend some time in the mind of Roseanne Barr, which is a little bit of a crazy place to be, but still somewhat entertaining if you can take the crazy. So I'm going to have to say Roseanne for president kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that Star Trek Beyond was going to make about $60 million. I was pretty close. It came in just under that. And that's not great. No matter how you spin it, that really isn't great. Comparing it to the other two Trek movies. The first one made $75 million on its opening weekend. The next one made $70 million on its opening weekend, but also had a Thursday opening. So its 4-day was much larger. And then this one is under $60 million. It made $59 million and change. People are going to debate this, and we'll see what happens overseas, but this does put the franchise in jeopardy, I think, a little bit, because $60 million is not a great start, not for a movie that costs $185 million to make, that's for certain. And that is where the rubber meets the road, because at the same time, you can have a movie like Lights Out perform with over $20 million, which was way more than anyone expected it to do, and people are super ecstatic and excited about that and saying that's a huge hit, even though it made only a third of what Star Trek made. But that's because Lights Out cost $5 million to make, and Star Trek Beyond was $185 million. Ice Age Collision Course made just under Lights Out, so it made just over $21 million. But who cares what it does in the States, because it's doing great guns overseas. It's over 200 million internationally. That is where it makes its money. So even if you didn't go see Ice Age this last week, you're going to get more of those movies, because that is what happens in movies today. The international box office takes it all. This week, I think Jason Bourne is probably good for 60 million. I think it costs less than Star Trek, so I think it's a better opening weekend than Star Trek. And I think Bad Moms is actually going to overperform. I think Bad Moms is going to do surprisingly well, just because A, it's funny, and B, there's a lot of moms out there who can relate to it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Couple ones that came out earlier this year. You've got Hardcore Henry, which was a lot of fun. It's a completely violently insane movie, but it's a neat journey. And it works better on the small screen because it doesn't make you want to throw up so much having watched it on the ginormous screen. The Boss is also out. That stars Melissa McCarthy as a sort of a Martha Stewart type media mogul who gets put into prison for securities fraud, kind of going through that Martha Stewart moment. Criminal, which I talked about earlier in the show. Gal Gadot trying to act, desperately trying to act and cry on cue and failing miserably. Sing Street, which was one of the best movies of the year so far, about an Irish kid back in the 80s coming of age and finding his way through new wave music. Kind of cool, and it's just got some great songs and it's got a lot of good heart. And then finally, there's Barbershop, The Next Cut, which is the latest in the Barbershop series. And of course, Mystery Science Theater, Volume 36. You can catch up on 4 special episodes of Mystery Science Theater from its past. That is it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the final big summer superhero movie. That is Suicide Squad. The bad guys are in control. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.